Stand by for the fastest 60 minutes in Jewish radio. It's time for the Jewish Experience. Everyone, welcome back. Well, it looks like Annapolis, the famous Israeli sellout, is quickly becoming a non-event, thank God. And you heard it here first last week. How about that? Hi, I'm Hirsch DeLynn, your host, and you are tuned in to Pittsburgh's only Jewish radio program, The Jewish Experience. Parsha this week is Vayishlach. As you remember, our hero Yaakov returns to the Holy Land and on the way is about to meet his brother and nemesis, Esav. So Yaakov sends messengers to try to reconcile with him, and they report that Esav is heavily armed with 400 men. So Yaakov prays. He prepares for war, and he sends gifts to Esav. Note that Yaakov does not rely on prayer alone. Even knowing that everything comes from the one above, he still prepares for war and sends gifts to appease his enemy. Well, we learn from this that one has to make a keli, or a vessel, to receive God's blessings. Just praying and saying, the Lord will provide, will not work if you also don't do your best to make it happen. And Yaakov stays behind when they cross the river and wrestles with the angel of Esav and prevails. He gets a dislocated hip, but the angel bestows upon him the name Israel, or Yisroel, which means he who prevails over the divine. Anyway, the two brothers meet and they kiss. Esav asks Yaakov to travel with him, but they go separate ways. Yaakov camps in Shem, where the ruler kidnaps his daughter Dinah and Yaakov's two sons, Shimon and Levi, then ransack the city, kill all the males, and take their sister back from the evil king. That'll teach them. Well, this is the parsha where Rachel dies, giving birth to Binyamin, the last of the 12 tribes of Israel. And she's buried along the road where she remains today. Many visitors stop to pay their respects at Rachel's tomb, where she gives strength to the Jews that were heading out to Gullis during the dispersion. And speaking of giving strength, our staff is giving all their strength to bring you quality Jewish radio with Musical Moish, Rabbi Meir Goldwasser, Rabbi Yosef Eisen, and Ms. Devorah DeLynn from Israel. So sit back and enjoy 60 minutes of the best Jewish radio in Pennsylvania. Of course, we'll have your community announcements and mazel tovs, along with current news fresh from Israel National Radio, coming up on the half hour. And if you haven't sponsored a segment yet, please step up and do so now. Even if you do an $18 segment just to help us stay on the air, it'd be greatly appreciated. I want to continue to bring you the best and only authentic Jewish radio in Pittsburgh, but we definitely do have to have your support. If everybody helps a little, nobody has to help a lot. Call us and get the mitzvah today, 412-979-5770 or jewishexperience@verizon.net. And today's guest is going to be Deborah Klayman, who writes under the name of Deborah DaCosta. Fascinating woman, has written Jewish children's books of a multicultural bent. You got to stay with us for this one. It's going to be very interesting. If you think Judaism is all European Jews, you got something coming. It's going to be fascinating to talk about some of the customs that that some of the Jews do in Mexico, for example, and some of the Jews do in other areas of the world. She spent time in Yerushalayim in Jerusalem and has chronicled some of this in a book, Snow in Jerusalem, and also her book, Hanukkah Moon, talks about the Mexican Jewish customs for Hanukkah. And there's some things in there I'll bet you've never heard and will never hear anyplace else except right here on your Jewish Experience radio program. So, as always, we thank our regular sponsors, Burton Hirsch Funeral Home, Next Generation Financial Services, First Mariner Bank, Pittsburgh Symphony Orchestra, and Artistic Photography. And we still have a special gift of a beautiful refrigerator magnet. We keep getting them in, keep sending them out. Yours free when you call us at 412-979-5770 or send us an email at jewishexperience@verizon.net. Hey, they may become very valuable someday. Don't forget candlelighting time tonight, 4:39 p.m., almost the earliest Shabbos of the year, and that's coming up in a couple of weeks. Rabbi Goldwasser's Lessons in Torah this week is sponsored by one of the Jewish Experience's most enthusiastic listeners, Avraham Schwartzberg, who invites everybody to match him to step up to the plate and sponsor a segment yourself. We want to personally thank Avraham Schwartzberg for stepping up and sponsoring Rabbi Goldwasser's Torah lesson.
When Yaakov was leaving his home and going to his uncle's house in a foreign land in order to find himself a wife, what should have been the first steps that the select of the patriarchs should have taken in preparation for marriage, in preparation for establishing a home that was to be the foundation of the entire Jewish people? Surely they should have been to learn the language and culture of the new land where he was going, to adopt their mode of dress, and to immerse himself in their civilization. In this way he would be assured to be successful. But the Torah tells us otherwise. Yaakov's first preparatory step was to stop in Davin, and the place at which he stopped was the site of the future Beis HaMikdash. Later, Yaakov lay down to sleep, resting his head on some rocks. In the morning, after having experienced a revelation of God to him in a vision during the night, he set up the rocks as a monument and declared, "And this rock which I have set up as a monument shall become the house of Hashem." Neither gold nor silver, but simple stones, were elevated by Yaakov to the extent that they became a sanctuary. We, Yaakov's children, have received the divine command, "And they shall make for me a sanctuary, and I will dwell within them." Our sages note that it does not say within it, but within them, meaning in the heart of each one of our people, man, woman, boy, and girl. And while we were commanded to make one general sanctuary for the entire nation, a sanctuary of gold and silver and copper, and other building materials, we were commanded also to make a sanctuary for Hashem, like Yaakov, in our heart and in our home, a sanctuary of Torah and mitzvahs, of good deeds and conduct. The sanctuary in Yerushalayim could be, and was twice destroyed, but the sanctuary in our hearts and our homes can never be destroyed. Even more, every one of us must strive to add every day an extra measure of holiness to this personal sanctuary of ours, by more Torah and more mitzvahs, and by spreading more holiness around us.
Retirement can be a wonderful reward for years of hard work, but it can also be stressful as you deal with questions about how to maintain your standard of living while protecting what you worked so hard for. What if I told you that you could generate extra cash flow without touching a penny of your savings, investments, or current income? If you or someone you love is 62 years or older and owns their own home, they may be able to take advantage of a federally regulated program called a home equity conversion mortgage or reverse mortgage. Seniors all across the U.S. are using reverse mortgages to increase their cash flow for purchasing long-term care insurance, putting grandkids through college, making charitable donations, paying off credit card debt, paying for prescription drugs, buying vacation homes, and paying for much-needed home repair. Call for a free copy of the Homekeeper Mortgage Consumer Fact Sheet today. Get the facts and help yourself and your family through a reverse mortgage. Call Andy at 412-562-2220 for a free copy while supplies last. Again, that number is 412-562-2220 for your free copy of the Homekeeper Mortgage Consumer Fact Sheet. First Mariner Bank is an equal housing lender.
Will Israel ever see an end to violence? How will the war against Iraq's insurgents impact Israel? Will changes on the Supreme Court have any effect on the Jewish community? Is anti-Semitism in Europe on the rise? What can be done about it? For a look behind the headlines, read the Forward, the nation's Jewish newspaper. The Forward reveals the personalities, motivations, and histories that are fueling the news abroad. The Forward also provides an in-depth look at issues affecting us at home, with comprehensive reports on everything from politics and religion to culture and the arts. It even has its own matchmaking section for Jewish singles. Try 4 weeks free, then be billed $24.95 for another 26 issues. Not satisfied? Just write cancel on the bill and keep the first four issues free.
Call now for the Forward, 800-992-3333. That's 800-992-3333. All around us, life is moving faster and faster. Things are changing all the time. And it's a comfort to know in your time of need that at Burton Hirsch Funeral Home, the Jewish tradition continues. Burton Hirsch Funeral Home has served the Pittsburgh Jewish community since 1947 and has recently remodeled its entire facility to better serve you. Burton Hirsch Funeral Directors are members of the Jewish Funeral Directors Association and work closely with area rabbis to ensure that your needs as a Jewish family are totally met. Their attentive and compassionate guidance results in treating each family as their own. I personally met with Michael Hilgefort. And did you know that Burton Hirsch Funeral Home is even involved with community educational programs to ensure that Jewish families know what to do to have a proper burial? In your time of special need, call Squirrel Hill's only Jewish funeral home, Burton Hirsch, at 412-521-2600. That's 412-521-2600. They welcome your request to visit and tour their state-of-the-art facilities. Burton Hirsch Funeral Home, proud sponsors of the Jewish Experience, 412-521-2600.
Yes.
Time for a moment in Jewish history with the author of Miraculous Journey, Rabbi Yosef Eisen.
The Babylonian Talmud, a monumental work of scholarship, has become the heart and soul of the Jewish people. Even the word scholarship is defined as one's knowledge of the Talmud. Its study has given Jews many things, not the least of which is succor and strength to withstand all the vicissitudes of life. An all-encompassing work, the Talmud discusses not only law and ethics, but also practical matters such as investment strategy and unhealthful practices. Its eclectic topics range from the distribution of profits in a partnership to the state of the world in the Messianic era. Humorous anecdotes are related, such as the story of the man who boxed his friend's ear and was fined half a zuz, a type of coin. However, since the boxer had only a one zuz coin and his friend had no change, he boxed his friend's ear again and told him to keep the change. Heartbreaking stories are also told, such as the terrible suffering of the Jewish people at the time of the destruction of the Second Temple. Perhaps because of its greatness, throughout the generations, the Talmud has been the target of anti-Semites, who know that to destroy the Talmud is to destroy the Jewish people. It was publicly burned in the Middle Ages and again by the Nazis. For example, in 1940, the Reich Security Main Office sent the following directive to German authorities in Poland. The continued emigration of Jews from Eastern Europe to the West spells a continued spiritual regeneration of world Jewry, as it is mainly the Eastern Jews who supply a large proportion of the rabbis, Talmud teachers, etc., owing to their Orthodox religious beliefs, and they are urgently needed by Jewish organizations active in the United States. Transmitted with remarkable accuracy over the generations, the Talmud has survived the inevitable mistakes that creep in due to hand copying such vast material. To this day, Jews spend countless hours engrossed in its study, with many scholars devoting their lives to immersion in the Sea of Talmud. A popular system of study known as Daf Yomi was instituted in 1923. Participants study one page each day, completing the Talmud's 2,711 pages in 7.5 years. A massive worldwide celebration is held at the end of the cycle, where many thousands of Jews gather in such immense arenas as New York's Madison Square Garden and Nassau Coliseum, with others following on satellite hookups or staging their own celebrations. This is Rabbi Yosef Eisen wishing you a happy and healthy Shabbos.
Now, from the Israel National Radio Newsroom, here's Ernie Singer.
Ahead of this coming week's American-sponsored summit in Annapolis on a new Arab state inside Israel's borders, Prime Minister Ehud Olmert and Defense Minister Ehud Barak say that the status quo with the PLO cannot continue. Barak has told the Jerusalem Post that what he called inaction could prove more dangerous than action. Quoting Olmert, "We have spent too much time dealing with the status quo, but it will lead to results that are much worse than those of a failed conference. It will result in Hamas taking over Judea and Samaria, to a weakening or even the disappearance of the moderate Palestinians. Unless a political horizon can be found, the results will be deadly." Referring to the lack of a joint announcement as of Thursday, Olmert adding, "The gap is such that intensive negotiations will be able to narrow them to the point of formulating an agreement." The Post reports that the PLO is not interested in issuing a joint document with Israel at the upcoming meeting because it would be roundly criticized by Hamas and other Arab opponents of peace. The newspaper citing sources in Jerusalem who say a leak of one of the draft documents that appeared in the Haaretz Daily on Thursday was apparently from sources within the PLO-assigned areas opposed to a joint statement. Hamas is conducting a campaign to undermine the Annapolis conference by propaganda that the Israeli right wing wants to invade the Temple Mount in Jerusalem, according to the Israeli Intelligence and Terrorism Information Center. The center also says that the campaign is aimed at deflecting attention from Hamas's recent massacre of Fatah supporters at a Gaza rally. Recent Hamas speeches warned of what they called the shame and disgrace of the meeting in Annapolis. The group called on Arabs and Muslims to censure what it calls the Zionist enemy for alleged attacks against the Al-Aqsa Mosque on the Temple Mount. Quoting a statement by Hamas, "Israel continues damaging Jerusalem and Al-Aqsa Mosque. It is planning to excavate additional tunnels under the mosque, and right-wing Israeli activists invaded the Al-Aqsa Mosque precinct." According to the London-based Arabic newspaper Al-Hayat, tensions are high between Hamas and Fatah in advance of the group's traditional annual celebrations in December and January. Hamas celebrates the anniversary of its creation on December 14th, while Fatah celebrates its anniversary on January 1st. A senior Hamas terrorist telling Al-Hayat that if Hamas terrorists in Judea and Samaria are not allowed to celebrate 20 years of Hamas terrorism this December, then Fatah terrorists in Gaza will not be allowed to celebrate in January. A major in the medical division of the Israeli reserves who sent an email to Hamas's Al-Azhar University in Gaza, in which he expressed his desire to join the resistance, has been charged with offering his services as a spy to foreign agents, including Iran. 45-year-old psychiatrist David Shamir is charged with attempts at spying, contact with a foreign agent, and obstruction of justice. The prosecution contends that during his reserve duty, Shamir saw classified materials, including emergency medical corps plans, plans showing the distribution of the medical corps and control centers, plans for evacuation of civilians in case of a missile attack, and various operational and intelligence assessments. Security officials say Shamir has confessed to contacting the Iranian Foreign Office by email in April. Several days later, the charge sheet says he was contacted by the elements he had contacted, although nothing came of it. In August, he sent a fax to Iranian consulates in England and Turkey from his home. Shamir also allegedly contacted the Russian intelligence service FSB and inquired about the recruitment process for spies, expressing his desire to serve the organization. Justice Minister Daniel Friedman has submitted the name of Dr. Aviad HaKohen, Dean of Shaarei Mishpat College in Hod HaSharon, for candidacy to the Supreme Court. According to Haaretz, Court President Dorit Beinish intends to prevent the appointment of members of the Academia in the upcoming session of the appointment committee, including her own candidates. Professor Paul Eidelberg charges that the court is anti-Zionist and is deliberately undermining the rule of law in the Jewish state. Hear him on the Tobias Singer Show, on demand on the Internet at IsraelNationalRadio.com. The flow of streams in the Galilee following this week's rainstorm reached levels that normally are recorded in February. Meteorologists noted at least 4 inches of rainfall in the area around the Sea of Galilee, or Kinneret in Hebrew, which rose almost half an inch from the rainfall, not including the continuing runoff. Shabbat Yud Dalet, or the 14th of Kislev on the Jewish calendar, and the weather forecast, clear to partly cloudy, with temperatures going up Friday afternoon, but still cooler than normal. No significant change in temperature on Shabbat, with a slight rise Sunday and Monday. In Jerusalem Friday, 16 degrees centigrade, 61 Fahrenheit. Ernie Singer, Israel National Radio.
That was a look at Jerusalem weather. And now, for your local weather, here's meteorologist Glenn Foxen.
The weather synopsis for Pittsburgh and vicinity. With a high-pressure system over the forecast area, it should be a beautiful Shabbos. Dry and cool conditions are forecasted. A return flow with the high will bring an increase in cloudiness on Sunday, with the chance of showers from Sunday night into Monday. This chance of showers will increase even further on Monday with the approach of a low-pressure storm system from the west. The storm track will keep Pittsburgh on its warm side, so only rain is expected. The forecast for Pittsburgh and vicinity, Shabbos day, mostly sunny and cool, with the high temperatures between 40 and 45 degrees. Saturday night, partly cloudy and cold, with the low temperatures 25 to 30 degrees. Sunday, increasing cloudiness and milder, with scattered rain showers developing. Sunday night into Monday, cloudy with the increased chance of showers, low in the 40s and high near 50. This is meteorologist Glenn Foxen wishing everyone good weather and great times this Shabbos.
We want to wish our brothers and sisters in the Holy Land a very peaceful and restful Shabbat.
Let's take a look at the Mazel Tovs this week. Gavri Butler, son of Danny and Nina Butler, who has successfully passed the bar exam. Mazel Tov, Mazel Tov. And, of course, David Shapira on his upcoming marriage to Cindy Bousis. Mazel Tov to all. And looking at events around the community, new class on Israel, Spirit of the Land, has been ongoing. And we still have some time to stop by while we all care about Israel. And it's in five locations: Squirrel Hill, Shadyside, Downtown, South Hills, and Fox Chapel. You want to get the updated information, visit myjli.com for more information, or call 412-421-3561. Father and Son program at the Kollel after Shabbos, 7:15 to 8 p.m. At least three prizes, then pizza and cookies. You don't want to miss this. You bring someone new, and you can receive an extra prize raffle ticket. Call the Kollel for more information, 412-420-0220. And don't forget the ongoing Meeting of Food Addicts and Recovery Anonymous, meeting at Shari Torah every Sunday evening from 7 to 8:30 p.m. It is a recovery group for people who cannot control their eating or their weight. Very successful, not for women only. Men are also invited. For more information, call Ilan at 412-422-2224. And, of course, if you'd like to have your Mazel Tovs on our program, don't forget, you know, people have been getting them in, but they've been late, so we've had to move them up to the following week. Try to get them in by Wednesday by 5. Call 412-979-5770 or email jewishexperience@verizon.net by noon on Monday for that week's program. Candlelighting time this week, 4:39 p.m. Now I'd like to welcome Deborah Paula Klayman, who writes under the pen name Deborah DaCosta. Started writing stories for assignments and for fun in the third grade, but didn't begin writing seriously until high school. She has a master's degree in remedial reading and a doctorate in development psychology. She lives in Maryland with her husband Warren and worked as an educational consultant, writing articles on children and education and ghostwriting political speeches, then went back to classroom teaching. Well, today, she writes for children and teens full-time at home. Her latest book, Hanukkah Moon, is a Hanukkah story with a multicultural focus. Now, I've never heard too much about multicultural Jewish books until now, so it should be very interesting. Deborah, welcome to the Jewish Experience.
Thank you very much.
We're glad to have you, and it's a fascinating idea. First of all, children's books, there's been a lot of Jewish children's books that have been written throughout time. I've seen a number of them. My kids have had a number of them. But I've never seen a multicultural Jewish book. So, first of all, before we even start on this, how long have you been writing children's books, and what got you, so to speak, edged into that multicultural context?
Okay, well, I've been writing for about 10 years, but my first book, a novel, has not yet been published. But the more recent books are just about the past 5 years. It takes picture books quite a while to come out, so
right.
From the time I sold them to the time they actually appear,
sure.
You know, there's a lack of time.
So you have somebody like that you take on board that is just illustrates what you do?
The publisher gets the illustrator.
Uh-huh. Very good.
And I've been very lucky both times. They were great illustrators.
So why children's books? I mean, what led you in that direction?
Well, I work with children. I've been a teacher for K through 12.
Mm-hmm.
More recently, I taught high school for about 16 years, world history, which certainly led me into multiculturalism more than I was before. But I was basically an international studies major as an undergraduate.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And I must say that despite all my various degrees that I've gotten over the years, it's my undergraduate degree that influences my writing the most.
Well, you know, it's interesting. At the same time that we were notified by about this book that has come out, also somebody sent me a YouTube about a Jewish congregation in Chicago that's black, and there has been a number of black Hebrew congregations, but this is a regular Jewish congregation with an Ethiopian flair, and it claims to be the original Jews that came, quote, out of Egypt, out of Africa. And
well, that could be.
Yeah,
I don't know.
You know, their customs are interesting. They read, when they read the Torah, and their service is very, looks like a conservative service in types of observance, but then of course they have the certain singing and almost gospel like music, which certainly doesn't sound Jewish, but the rabbi there says, and we're going to try to get him on the program, it sounds like, you know, they're committed to authentic Judaism as they know it coming from their culture. So it is a fascinating thing, and it's a concept most European Jews never stop to think about, I think, really. And so it's opening up a whole new area. So in these books, talk a little bit about what the books are about, Hanukkah, Moon, and Snow in Jerusalem, and where the multicultural aspect comes in.
Okay, well, first of all, the multicultural aspect comes in by virtue of my 3 trips to Israel,
okay,
where I was astounded to find that all the Jews were not Ashkenazic and white.
Mm-hmm.
And actually mentioned the Ethiopian Jews. There were a lot of them there. We went through their settlement, and it was very interesting to find that they really practice an old-time biblical Judaism.
Yes. And of course, the big question, though, in this concept is, with all these cultures, is halakhically, under Jewish law, are they actually Jewish? And that's something that, I mean, we can't deal with here, but that's something that's, you know, been the big question. And that's, even with this congregation in Chicago, one of the things we're going to be looking at and investigating with the rabbi is, you know, from a halacha standpoint, a universal acceptance standpoint, I guess, you know, are they Jewish? So, I mean,
they consider themselves Jewish, but a lot of them have themselves converted anyway, just to make sure that everything is kosher.
Kosher, right. Exactly. So, all right. So, let's get back to the book then, and talk a little bit about Hanukkah, Moon, and Snow in Jerusalem. So, specifically, what are we bringing in here?
Okay. Well, Hanukkah, Moon is actually about Mexican Hanukkah customs, and I learned about them really from a friend of mine who was Catholic, who told me one day at lunch that in his family they always sang a Hanukkah song every year during Hanukkah. They'd sing a Hanukkah song in Spanish.
Huh.
I said, that's strange. I said, why did you do that? And he said, because his great-grandmother was Jewish. So I started to think about it. You know, that's true. I had read about the Jews who escaped from Spain and came up through Latin America.
Sure.
From Portugal to Latin America, and then some of them came up into the United States. And I thought, well, gee, that's interesting. I wonder what else they do. So I started researching it, and I found these various customs, which included Rosh Chodesh, which was the new moon, the night of the new moon,
right,
that many Jews, Sephardic Jews and Mexican Jews and Jews in various Tunisia and other places, have a special celebration for women on that night, and especially during Hanukkah when the women are supposed to get special gifts and
right.
not have to do any work and
sure.
so on.
Well, by the way, just as a side comment, that's an Ashkenazi Judaism also. Rosh Chodesh is a women's
oh,
holiday.
Oh, no, true, yeah. but yeah. they really did more of it.
Okay.
It was a bigger thing. So
well, give us an idea of what some of the stuff that they did that would be kind of different, just for the listeners to get a feeling.
Well, in my book, I have one of the things they did was you're supposed to give something to poor people or take care of animals
mm-hmm. That's
on that night. And in my book, they put aside food outside on a table. And when it's very dark and you can't see anything, the animals come and they get the food. So there's a lovely picture. These illustrations in Hanukkah Moon are really beautiful. And they were done by a woman in Poland who really I never met.
Mm-hmm.
And I worried that she wouldn't know anything about Jews, but she followed the text. Exactly.
So give us an idea of how the story develops, what happens in this.
Right, well, this little girl, parents decide that during Hanukkah she should go visit her Mexican cousin who had just moved to the United States and was a photography teacher at a college.
Mm-hmm.
So she goes, and you know, and she's concerned that the aunt won't know how they celebrate Hanukkah.
Mm-hmm.
And they reassure her that not only will she celebrate Hanukkah, but she'll learn all about the Hanukkah moon. And she doesn't understand what a Hanukkah moon is, so she questions that. Anyway, she goes and she stays with the aunt, and her father gives her Hanukkah gelt to put in her pocket before she goes,
sure.
so you know, children feel more comfortable.
Right.
Chocolate gelt, not real gelt.
Well, of course.
But what we all call gelt.
Right.
During Hanukkah. And she finds that there's some interesting things there. There's a dreidel hanging, a pinata dreidel hanging there to be opened up the night of the moon.
They beat it open like, you know, like a pinata?
Yeah, it's a yeah. pinata. They crack it open.
Mm-hmm.
And they put food out for the animals, she said, for their special visitors. And the little girl wonders why the visitors can't come in the house. You know, do they have bad manners? But mm-hmm. it turns out they're animals. and then her friends, her students come. And they each bring something. And little girl gives her something also. Oh, plus the aunt also is very artistic. She made her own Hanukkah out of clay, and it shows all the animals that come to the backyard the night of the Hanukkah moon or the new moon. And it was just the whole thing was very interesting just to learn about all of this.
Sure.
And then there's something in there, a really beautiful picture in there about Rosh Chodesh. When I describe how Moses comes down from the mountain and he finds them worshiping the golden idols,
mm-hmm.
except the women had not contributed their gold, so
right.
that's why they get this special night.
Right, that's right. And so why the focus on animals? Did you get into that at all to find out where that custom came from?
I think it's just to be kind and charitable. You're supposed to do something nice for some living creatures.
That's interesting. That
human or animal.
Right.
And, of course, that blends well with my beliefs because I'm very active in animal welfare issues. So.
Right. Yeah, we've got quite a number of animals in our house as well. But anyway, okay, so talk about snow in Jerusalem a little bit. How does that, is that obviously a different story with the same kind of multicultural aspect. So let's hear
well,
about that.
Well, I had been to Israel 3 times. One of the times it was for Holocaust. I'm a trained Holocaust educator, which I left out of my website.
Uh-huh.
There's only so much you can put in.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I guess it's a little bit too much. But as a result of the training, we went to a place in Haifa, I think it was. There was a museum about the diversity of the Jews.
Mm-hmm.
And after I came back and I was teaching about the Holocaust, I would start out by putting up pictures of people and say, and the kids would have to number 1 to 10 and put down which one was Jewish. And, of course, they were all different. There were black ones. There were redheads. There were
mm-hmm.
whatever. There were ones dressed in the traditional garb. And, of course, they were all Jewish.
Sure.
But most of them didn't realize that. Maybe just one or two would say, oh, you know, you can't tell by looking. So it started that way, and then I started to get interested in, well, what about what do all these people do? What are they all about? And I began studying them. I got truly interested in Sephardic Jews. And then my daughter went to graduate school in Israel for 2 years. She studied at Hebrew University. She was working on a master's in comparative religion.
Mm-hmm.
And we went over to visit her, and she was very concerned that the children there at that time, in their textbooks, said bad things about each other. She said they'll never get together.
Sure.
So I started to think about that. Plus, there are also a lot of stray cats in Israel, as there were at that time. And when I came back, I was kind of germinating this idea. What if two children decided they needed to, were both taking care of a stray cat, and for some reason they found out about each other, you know, what would happen then? So that's basically the story. It's about conflict resolution.
Oh, wow.
And peace in the Middle East. It was an extremely popular book. It got 6 awards and honors of various kinds. And it's being reprinted in very large reprint in time for Israel's birthday.
Great.
So it will be out in a couple of months.
Very nice. Okay, in the little time we have left, just very quickly, you write under the name Deborah DaCosta, and you mentioned a little bit on the website that it's got a family significance. Can you talk about that?
Yes. Most of my books have something to do with Hispanic people and who are also Jewish.
Okay.
And at the time I was writing it, my children were living on either coast. So I was going back and forth from Manhattan to
DaCosta, I got it.
And I made myself, well, maybe yeah. Deborah from the coast. And I didn't know at the time that my book would be so successful because I thought, well, gee, should I have a different name? What if I really bomb?
That's funny.
But I didn't.
Yeah.
So now I kept the name. Everybody says you can't change it now.
No, that's good. It's also intriguing. It's very, very nice to have that. Okay, so if people want to get your book, obviously they can go to Amazon.
Yes, they definitely can get it on Amazon. It's been very popular on Amazon. They can get it directly from the publishing company.
Okay, so and also from, I guess, from your website as well, no?
Yes.
And what is your website?
It's www.deborahdacosta.com.
Very nice. That's easy enough to remember. All right. Very nice. Well, thank you very much for being with us today and talking about multicultural Judaism. It's definitely a new thing in the Jewish experience. We've never
well,
talked about that before.
Well, it's always been multicultural, though. I'm glad that people are starting to become more aware of it.
I think so. Once we have this rabbi on the program, I don't think they'll ever forget it. But anyway, because he sounds like a very colorful guy, besides color. I mean, just colorful in general. So it should be fun. Deborah, thank you very much again for being with us. Have a good Shabbos, and we hope to talk to you again soon.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Don't be, cool as bay, there's no way to be my face.
for a look at the feminine side of things. Reporting from Israel, here's Ms. Devorah DeLynn.
A Jewish name is a description of the intrinsic character contained within a person. Achaya, which means life, is often a person with nurturing traits. Aliba is often one who is overflowing with love and caring. And Agolda is commonly one with a heart of gold. Of course, you can't say that everyone with the same name will have the same character, but you will notice similar traits expressing themselves that reflect upon a person's name. In Parshas Vayishlach, we are told of an interesting occurrence between Yaakov Avinu, our patriarch Jacob, and an angel. After transporting his family to the other side of the river, Yaakov remembers a jar of oil he left on the other side. Some say that this was the same jar of oil he used to anoint the stones upon which he slept when he had the dream of the ladder. Anyway, Yaakov turns to cross the river again when he meets the guardian angel of Esav, who attempts to destroy him. The two wrestle until just before dawn. The angel, realizing that he cannot win, and also having an urgent appointment in heaven to sing before Hashem at dawn, begs Yaakov to let him go. Yaakov agrees, but only if the angel will bless him. Interestingly enough, the angel chose to bless Yaakov concerning his name. No longer would Yaakov be called by Yaakov, but he would be called Yisrael, because, as the verse says, Sarisa, Yaakov had struggled with an angel and defeated him. The name Yaakov can also denote trickery, as the Hebrew word for trickery, Akav, has similar letters. By changing his name to Yisrael, the angel was telling him that nobody would be able to say that Yaakov got the blessings from Isaac his father through trickery, for the name Yisrael means Yashar Kel, Hashem's honest man. Changing a name can also change a decree. By changing his name from Yaakov to Yisrael, the decree that Esav would kill Yaakov was meaningless, for there was no decree that Esav should kill a Yisrael. Yaakov then poses an unusual question. He asks for the name of the angel. The angel tells him that the names of the angels, because they are messengers of God, are changed according to mission. If an angel was sent to heal somebody, he is called Raphael. If he was sent to help somebody, he is called Azrael. It is not proper for an angel to reveal his name, because then people would associate miracles with that specific angel, instead of attributing it to only Hashem. Furthermore, when a man becomes a victor, he makes his name famous so that all will fear him. But since the angel had not emerged a victor, why would Yaakov want to know his name? Yaakov relents, and the angel blesses him that he should have descendants as righteous as himself. Many things can be learned from this episode of Yaakov and the angel, but one lesson in particular really hit home. It's true that there are many who'd love to have fame and glory, who'd like to be known for their many talents and victories. But the true victors are the ones who do their good deeds in secret, for instead of making their own names known, they sanctify the name of Hashem, which will hasten the coming of Mashiach, our true and final victory. Have a good Shabbos. By the way, the angel who Yaakov fought with was called Samael.
Now it's time for another classic story from our master storyteller, Rabbi Meir Goldwasser.
This story centers around Rav Yudel Holtzman, who was one of the exceptional breed of Yerushalmi Jews, a kind, loving, and deeply sensitive man. Rav Yudel was also a noted Talmud Chacham, a Torah scholar, who with some of his friends comprised the Balei Halacha, a small group known for their exceptional diligence and attentiveness they showed in the performance of every mitzvah. Rav Yudel was very poor and had no children, but had a deeply caring heart that would break for another man's troubles. He was a soft touch for any cause, and at his insistence, the Gabbai Tzedakah, the collectors of charity, were always at his home. It happened that a simple tailor beloved by many, known in Yerushalayim very well, required an operation in the old Hadassah hospital. He had very little money himself and still had to raise the considerable sum of £60 for the operation. The one in charge of Tzedakah, Rav Zeidel, came to Rav Yudel's home and explained the tailor's plight. Rav Yudel sat dejected as he listened. "Oh, that's terrible," he interjected, when Rav Zeidel paused for a moment. "Nebuch, how unfortunate, how awful," he kept on repeating. When Rav Zeidel finished, Rav Yudel sighed and said, I wish so much that I could help. But what can I do? You know how little money I have. Everything that I do is from my miser money. And in case you want to know how I can give as much as I do, and Nebuch, the needs of Klal Yisrael are so many, I'll tell you. I borrow against my future miser account. But what should I do? He continued with anguish. My policy is that I don't borrow against the miser money if I'm a year overdrawn against that account, and I've already reached that point. I feel so bad for that tailor, Abudel continued. May Hashem grant him a complete recovery. Rav Zeidel nodded and said he fully understood and left Rav Yudel's home. He had walked only a block when Rav Yudel came running after him. Wait a minute, wait a minute. Rav Zeidel came back. The Ribono Shel Olam, the master of the world, suddenly inspired me with a great idea. Rav Zeidel turned back with a puzzled look and returned to Rav Yudel's home. He sat down in the dining area that consisted of some dilapidated furniture on a chair that looked as if it would barely hold him up. Rav Yudel began excitingly. Hashem put into my mind a plan which would allow me to help the tailor. Yes, it can work out. Listen, Rav Zeidel, you go to one of the larger gemachs in Yerushalayim and tell them to lend you 20 pounds in my name, and I'll pay it back. You see, it occurred to me that every week I spend a half shilling on the wine that I need for Kiddush for Shabbos. But the halacha is that a person can make Kiddush on challah as well as wine. And if I make Kiddush on challah every week, I'll have the extra money to repay the loan. At that rate, it would take more than 15 years for Rav Yudel to repay the loan. And so, for over 15 years, that is exactly what Rav Yudel did. This is Rabbi Meir Goldwasser, wishing you all a good Shabbos.
And so we come to the close of yet another exciting edition of the Jewish Experience radio program. Certainly want to thank Deborah Klayman, or Deborah DaCosta as her pen name, for her insight on multicultural Judaism. Look for her book, Hanukkah Moon, in the bookstores. And, of course, our faithful and cutting-edge staff, Rabbi Meir Goldwasser, Rabbi Yosef Eisen, MusicalMoish.com, Dr. Michael Shulman, Miss Devorah DeLynn, and reporting from Israel as usual. And, of course, our engineer, Jeremiah Bossenstein, for another outstanding show. Don't forget, candlelighting time is 4:39 p.m. It's been a ton of fun, but I got about a few seconds. I got to get out of here. We'll talk to you later. I'm Hirsch DeLynn. See you all next week. Same Yiddish time, same Yiddish channel. Shabbat Shalom. Shabbat Shalom. Shabbat Shalom. Shalom.